Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Wessex Safety Hour conference call. My name is Shelley, and I will be your operator for today. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time you require operator assistance, please press star zero, and I will be happy to assist you. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host for today, Ms. Tracy Chapstick. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Wessex. I hope I find you all well. I am in a room with some bean counters, which is very unusual. They're going to keep very quiet, which is very rare. And also, I have with me our lovely occupational health manager, Grantia. And I will come back to why we're going to do a double act in a couple of minutes. So, my intention is to go through the accidents and incidents that are on the blog. And then I want to talk about the symptoms, the signs and symptoms of heart attacks and strokes. There was a reason for that. And thirdly, Grantia will talk about improving your health and well-being so we don't get to section C, which is having to identify signs and symptoms of heart attacks and strokes. So, briefly on the blog, are a couple of events. And the ones that immediately jump out to mind is strapping, whether it's the wrong location or application of straps improperly. So that jumps out at me because, as most people are well aware, if you do not test before touch and you manage to put a strap in the wrong location, you will suffer from a flashover, and that may or may not injure you. So on that issue, all I'm going to say effectively is, if you are placing a strap, a short circuit strap, to support an isolation, you need to be 100% sure of where you are going, that you are in the right location, that ESCs or PICOPs have explained to you where you are going, and once you get there and you're in the right location, you apply the short circuit strap using the process which you have been trained. And the important part of that, of course, is test before touch, because if you don't test before touch, that means there is a life-saving rule breach, and there will be an investigation. But remembering that life-saving rules are there to save lives or to save injuries, and not because we are all mad. That brings me on to the second part. Now, on Friday morning, a man came to work feeling a little unwell. Fortunately, he was a qualified first aider and realised that the likelihood was that he was having a heart attack. So, he pointed out to people he didn't particularly feel very well, and an ambulance was called. Ambulance duly turned up. First problem was the ambulance couldn't find the depot. So, first learning point is, are all our depots signed to say this is where Network Rail X depot is? Because that does assist the ambulance service. So the ambulance crew work up on site, do some checks, and take him off to hospital. And then he went and underwent some checks. So what I suddenly thought about was, are we really aware of the signs and symptoms of a heart attack or even a stroke? And I say this from an interesting position, because about 8 years ago, my father had a heart attack on Boxing Day, and I missed it. Because he's one of those people that does not, he's still alive, by the way, because he is not one of those people who complains much. When he said he felt a bit weary and a bit tired, and he thought he might have indigestion, we let him go on his merry way walking the dog, and it transpired a couple of days later he had had a heart attack. Now, It wasn't a serious one, but what happened was his heart was damaged. And once it's damaged, it cannot be repaired. So, I thought I would talk through the signs and symptoms of a heart attack, remembering that although they are depicted in the movies as major clutching of heart and falling to ground, that is not always the way they happen. So, symptoms. And this list, courtesy of the NHS, says symptoms can include. So we'll walk through the symptoms of a heart attack, remembering that they are not always acute. So, chest pain. Everybody knows chest pain. It's a sensation of pressure, tightness, or squeezing in the centre of your chest. Pain in other parts of the body. It can feel as if the pain is travelling from your chest to your arms, and it's usually the left arm that is affected, but it can affect both arms. Jaw, neck, back and abdomen are also locations of pain that can indicate that potentially you could be having a heart attack. Feeling lightheaded or dizzy. And actually in the father's case, he was a bit grey around the gills to look at as well. So although internally lightheaded and dizzy, if you're looking at somebody potentially suffering from one of those, they do look a bit unwell, a bit grey around the gills, but not necessarily an extreme version of that. Sweating. Not to be confused with the menopause in ladies, which is why women have some different symptoms and they can easily get missed. Shortness of breath. Some people suffer shortness of breath anyway, so I think that is relative. Feeling sick or being sick. Obvious. But I do know people who have had all of these symptoms that have not had the feeling sick or being sick symptom. An overwhelming sense of anxiety, and it says in brackets here, similar to having a panic attack. If you've never had one, a bit difficult to gauge. But I think there is an element of knowing you're in trouble, feeling anxious or stressed above your normal level at that time. And the surprising one on this list was coughing and wheezing. So, chest pain, other additional pain in the top of your body effectively, feeling lightheaded or dizzy, sweating, shortness of breath, feeling or being sick, sense of anxiety, and coughing or wheezing. And I stress this says can include. It does not mean you've got a checklist and you've got to have all seven before you know you're in trouble. Although chest pain is often severe, some people only experience minor chest pain, similar to indigestion. And I think that means that if you know somebody who suffers with indigestion, is that pain any different to what they normally suffer with? If you've never had indigestion, which I haven't, you wouldn't necessarily be able to identify it. So goes back to the pain in the chest. So, what do you do? obviously call an ambulance. And actually, if you tell somebody, you really do have to stress that I'm in trouble here. I really, really do not feel unwell. I feel very well. I feel quite unwell. And an ambulance would be handy at this moment in time. Interestingly enough, if you work with a gang of blokes, or women for that matter, and they are, it's always the silent one in the corner that doesn't moan much, might say it quietly. And then you've got the other extreme, blokes who complain about everything all the time. So this is a personal conversation. And if you happen to be with somebody in this situation, have a good look and have a discussion if you're not sure. And I know it's a bit vague. If in doubt, 999, ambulance. And there is also something on the NHS website that says if you happen to be on your own whilst waiting for an ambulance, you need to swallow an aspirin, which will help thin your blood. So, signs and symptoms of a heart attack. I come at this from an angle that if this happens, you need to get somebody to hospital ASAP for them to minimize the damage that the heart can suffer if you prevaricate. So that's the important thing. Grazia will talk about what we can do to avoid this. And I'll leave that to Grazia because being a smoker, it would be hypocritical of me to deal with that any other way. An extreme case is a cardiac arrest, and that effectively is more like the styles of the movies when people's heart go into a spasm and then they stop beating. And this is why we have bought all the defibrillators. And I think we need to get hold of some more because I found out this morning there are certain locations that don't have one. So what we do have access to is the defibrillator, which I've not used one, but I'm told gives you a complete idiot's guide to how to use it. And you cannot get it wrong. That is, if somebody hits a deck, they appear not to be breathing, not moving, and do not respond to any stimulation, such as being touched or spoken to. So go for the defib. Or if you happen to be a first aider and you know what you're doing, then you can do what's the word called?
CPR.
CPR. CPR from the bean counter made my day. So do CPR. And again, call 999. Thank you, Grazia. I'm going to split this up now. Any questions on this so far? He says, assuming the woman is listening in.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask an audio question, please press star one on your phone. Immediately record your name, followed by the pound key. And we currently have no questions in the queue at this time.
Oh, right, okay. So thank you very much for that. The second bit I want to talk about is symptoms of a stroke. Pretty different, but I thought we would deal with this, and I know I've done it in the same phone call. Now, stroke. Identified sudden weakness or numbness, normally on one side of the body.
This is the one that was advertised and judged with the government. So facial weakness, arm weakness.
I'll run through this. Grazia's got a better idea. Sudden weakness or numbness on one side, difficulty in finding words, blurred vision and loss of sight, confusion, dizziness or unsteadiness, and a sudden severe headache. So that's the information I've pulled down. What Grazia has is a really groovy symptom list, complete with mnemonic. That she's going to go through now.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's Grazia. So we've all seen the ad on TV called FAST. So it covers facial weakness. So can somebody smile? Well, is their eye dropped on one side? So that's F for facial weakness. The A in FAST is for arm weakness. So can they raise both arms? And the third one is your S. Is speech problems. So can they speak clearly and can they understand what you are saying? If they have any of these symptoms, then it's time to call 999. It's as simple as that. FAST, facial weakness, arm weakness, or speech problems.
Thank you, Grazia. Right, so I've highlighted my bits about identifying the signs and symptoms, but I do know in both cases. You need to get to the hospital as soon as possible to minimise damage. And I have some experience with stroke in family as well. So the sooner they can get treatment, the less severe the outcome is. So what I will do now is hand you to Grazia to talk about how we can prevent being in probably a higher risk category for doing this. And interestingly enough, I did the wellness questionnaire the other week, which wasn't so bad, and it took 8 years off my life, despite the fact that I smoke. So I'll pass you over to Grazia, and listen up, boys and girls.
Good afternoon, everyone. So I thought that I'd just summarise what Tracy had said, especially in relation to cardiac arrest, heart attack, and stroke. So just in summary, again, these are quite familiar terms that is banded around, but we don't always fully understand what each of these terms mean. So they all get linked to something called cardiovascular disease, so something related to diseases affecting our heart and vascular system. So when we talk about coronary heart disease, it's probably one of the leading killers in the Western world, and it basically comes down to extra plaque formation in the blood vessels. So how that works is, we've got a lot of symptoms follow up, a lot of conditions follow out from coronary heart disease. That's angina, which is primarily the chest pain that people can experience, so which Tracy had covered already. We have cardiac arrest, which Tracy had covered already as well, which is basically when your heart stops beating and you have something called ventricular fibrillation, really, really scary word. And that's the one where the defib comes in quite handy. The heart attack is the one where the blood vessels that supply your heart muscle becomes obstructed because of too much a blood clot that's got loose due to lots of plaque in the and cholesterol in your system. That's also a good one to call the emergency services. And then finally, your stroke as well, which is basically very similar to your heart attack, except the area that's affected is not your heart, it's your brain, and the blood vessels to your brain is obstructed. So these are all, as you can imagine, heart and brain, all serious areas, and the recovery from those injuries can be life-changing. What can we do about these? Well, the Heart Foundation has so kindly say that you have modifiable and non-modifiable risk factors. Non-modifiable risk factors just comes down to things like family history. I'm sorry to say, but if you have a brother or a father who was diagnosed with heart disease before the age of 55, then you have a family history of heart disease. If you have a mother or sister who was diagnosed with heart disease before the age of 65, then you have a family history of heart disease. So that is not something that you could change. The same thing comes down to ethnicity as well. Individuals of Asian descent is more vulnerable than the rest of the population to heart conditions and heart disease. So these are not things that you can change, these risk factors. However, there are modifiable risk factors that you can have an influence on, and one of those shiny beacons of light that you can change is smoking. So why is smoking such a big issue? Because smoking damages the lining of our arteries, and when it damages the lining of our arteries, it makes it much more easy for fatty deposits to get stuck in those areas and then narrow the artery, and then that obviously leads to angina, heart attack, or stroke. Also, the other problem with the smoking effects is the carbon monoxide in tobacco smoke decreases the oxygen in our blood, which means our poor heart has to work a lot harder to pump oxygen for the body, for the activities that it needs. Another bad thing about smoking, I'm sorry for the smokers out there, is nicotine in cigarettes stimulate something called adrenaline. Now that little nifty hormone is what we use in our fight and flight response, our stress response. And because it stimulates adrenaline, it makes our heart beat faster, it raises our blood pressure, and it makes our heart work harder, which is obviously not good things in the long term. So once again, if you were thinking about it, we are in Stoptober at the moment, and this is the opportunity to make that decision. In relation to our other risk factors, it comes down to high cholesterol, and I know a lot of our route employees are probably coming to the 40 plus years, and as such, it really is now the opportunity to make use of the NHS free health check, which gives you an opportunity to get your cholesterol screened, your blood pressure taken, and your risk for diabetes explored. These are important risk factors that once you are over 40, it's good to have knowledge of your numbers. Having knowledge of your numbers makes you much better prepared for understanding your risk of these conditions. I will put together a little summary again of these risk factors and everything discussed, with also some clear guidance of where you can get more support and information from. But I'll hand you over to Tracy. Thank you.
Eloquently put. Thank you very much. Right, so we've got a few minutes left for questions, if anybody has any they would like to ask.
And just as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask an audio question, please press star 1 on your phone, immediately record your name, followed by the pound key.
I'm going to say, not, are you going to give up smoking? I reckon you should do the next safety now. Bean counters do safety. People have phoned in for miles. You know what? The bean counter for safety. Oh, just bean counting for safety people, if you like. Leave me in charge of the brand, budget brand, we'll be fine. Yeah. Well, I think we're okay. I want no burning questions. I don't know whether my style is inappropriate, whatever. I just like to liven it up a bit, to be fair. Yeah. I think you need, it's a little bit like taking your horse to the water. We need to take the horses a lot more to the water. You can't make it drink, but at least drink much more of that.
Yeah, see, the thing is...
Yeah, yeah, it's good to listen to.
I believe in free will. I also believe you can neutralise an awful lot of things by attitude. I do not accept. I will have hit to my 80s in full possession of a fit body and a few marbles. Mm. And there's no negotiation. I have law of attraction.
And just pardon the interruption, we did have someone that queued up for a question. They didn't record their name, so it didn't register. But I can go ahead and open their line. So if the person who did try to queue up for a question, your line is now open.
Hello, Tracy.
Hello, sir.
It's Steve Edwards.
Ah, Mr. Edwards.
How are we? Yeah, marvellous, thank you. It's just a little point I'd like to raise. I was on the first aid refresher course last week, and part of that now includes a demonstration on how to use the D-fits. So you actually get to play with them.
So you can, actually, can we play with them in the offices then?
Theoretically, as long as everybody's aware that we're going to be doing so, yes. Because they have to be looked at for checking dates and everything anyway. So theoretically, there's nothing to stop that happening.
Right, okay. Could we do a video of one being used who have never seen it?
I don't see why not. It seems like a good idea to me.
Right, okay. We'll sort that out. Right, so first aid. So the first aid course now includes using defibrillators. That's useful. We can do a video and put it out there for those who... Because I think it would scare me, to be honest. I wouldn't want to trust a machine that spoke to me. So I think potentially there's room for a video. So our first aiders know what they're doing. We'll sort of a mechanism for us to know what we are doing. And in most places we've got the kit. Were there any other changes on the first aid course for this?
Not really, no. I think it all comes, a lot of it comes down to who you get training you on the day. We were very fortunate. We had somebody who'd been a paramedic for 12 years and then 8 years in the fire service. So we had somebody who'd been there and done it. So it was very, very good.
Are there any other first aid top tips that didn't come out in this conversation that I've missed?
Ooh, now you're asking questions. One second. I think the big one, Tracy, the one that everybody needs to remember, Dr. ABC. If everybody just jots Dr. ABC down,
yeah,
don't go too far wrong. And that is danger, response, airways, breathing, and then check the individual.
Okay. Right. I might put that on the blog. Dr. ABC. Okay. All right, brilliant. Anything else, Steve?
No, I mean, the main thing with anything to do with first aid, don't be afraid to get involved. The likelihood is, if somebody is that bad, if you can keep them alive, you're doing a damn good job, because figures aren't great for people. People have got a lot more chance if somebody puts their hand up and goes, yeah, I'm going to do this. When people don't do anything, I think it's 6% of people survive heart attacks or like loss of consciousness, breathing, etc. Those figures don't improve massively, but they improve enough, and it might just be the difference. So it's mainly, don't be afraid to put your head above the parapet. If you think you know, try and preserve life.
Cool. Right, okay, thank you, Steve.
You're very
welcome. Right, I'm assuming we have no more calls?
We have no further questions in the queue at this time.
Okay, all right. Well, I'd like to thank everybody for listening. It's not an easy voice to listen to. And Steve for calling in. And you, my darling, for doing a mighty fine job in organising us. And we'll speak again. Take care.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect and have a great day.